Ms. Fox.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Hillary Fox, and I'm representing Mr. Gonzalo Alcala Maravilla, who I'll call Mr. Alcala. In this case, the grand jury indicted Mr. Alcala for the offense of being illegally found in the United States. At the close of his trial, however, the district court judge instructed the jury, both orally and in writing, to consider only whether Mr. Alcala was guilty of a different offense of illegally reentering the United States. And that was an offense for which Mr. Alcala was never indicted. The court's actions constructively amended the indictment. Contrary to the government's suggestions, it wasn't simply a variance regarding the indictment and the proof. It wasn't simply a misdescription of elements. Rather, the court instructed the jury on a separate crime.
Let me ask you sort of a bottom line question. Clearly, the court instructed incorrectly, and clearly everybody was asleep. Okay. That means that we review for plain error. And the bottom line question then is, were substantial rights really affected such that the error should be noticed? Okay. There is an argument that the error doesn't need to be noticed because the crime, in effect, is illegal reentry. And that consists of three offenses. I mean, you can be convicted of illegal reentry if you have attempted to reenter, if you have illegally reentered, or if you're found in the United States after having illegally reentered. So we've said there are three different offenses, but it's the same crime, and you can't be found here if you haven't reentered, and that's not an issue. So tell me why, in your judgment, we should notice the error, assuming that it was error.
Well, in response to Your Honor's question, one obvious distinction is that the crime of reentry would be venued differently than the crime of being found in. It's not a crime for which Mr. Alcala, under most circumstances, could have been indicted in this district. And under the Hernandez decision...
Does that matter? I mean, is that a matter of substantial rights?
I think it does, Your Honor. Under the Hernandez decision, this Court has confirmed that questions of venue are not simply matters of formal public legal formality, but actually affect public policy, because it is a fundamental constitutional right to be tried in the district in which the offense is committed. So that's one issue. Additional issues, however, are that the offense of reentry, the separate offense, has different defenses. It has an issue about the voluntariness of the entry. There are issues about the mental state of the defendant. There are issues about the statute of limitations, which I think in this case are not implicated. But there are a whole host of, it's illegal reentry. It's a relatively simple charge. However, the elements are different and the defenses are different to illegally reentering. And because the defendant wasn't indicted, and because that wasn't the issue at trial, the defendant had no reason to put on any evidence to contest the legality of the reentry. And we certainly have no evidence on this record that any reentry was even actionable in this district. So that's, I think, the short answer, or the first answer. But the second answer to the Court's question, because obviously that's the heart of this case, is that in the post-Olano decisions by this circuit, and most recently in Shipsey and DiPentino, the Court has consistently said Olano leaves open the question of whether a constructive amendment is still a structural error that requires, or a structural better, an error that requires reversal because it's per se error. And I think previously, under the Supreme Court's decision in Styrone, all of the circuits had found that a constructive amendment was a per se error. And the Ninth Circuit in Stewart Clinical Laboratories and other cases.
Assuming it's not a per se error, nevertheless, should it be recognized?
Yes.
Irene Johnson is pretty much saying it's not structural error, but I don't know whether that matters very much.
Well, this is the reason. What happened in DiPentino, which was a Clean Water Act case in which the defendants was indicted on a certain offense of a violation of a certain regulation of asbestos removal, and then the trial went in, and at the close of trial, the Court constructively amended the indictment, the Ninth Circuit held, by adding a second work regulation, work practice regulation, and the jury could find that the defendant was guilty if he'd violated either of two regulations. Now, both of them, as this Court noted in this case, amounted to the same Clean Water Act violation. They were simply different ways to violate the same statute. In DiPentino, the Court found that it wouldn't need to reach the whole structural error issue because there was prejudice by definition, and the reason was it was possible that the defendant was convicted under a theory of the offense for which he was not indicted. And interestingly, in DiPentino, the second issue before the Court was sufficiency of the evidence, and it said, we're not going to rule for the defendant on that. We do find there was sufficient evidence to convict him for the indicted offense. However, because we cannot know whether the jury convicted on the indicted or the unindicted, that requires reversal, and necessarily the fourth prong is satisfied. It would affect the fairness of the proceedings to allow someone to be convicted for an offense for which they were not indicted. And I think DiPentino controls this case. I would, of course, be happy to reach the issue and establish its structural error, but knowing the Court's prudence in these matters, I think that DiPentino controls. The Court need not reach the issue of structural error, but can find, following Shipsy and DiPentino, but particularly DiPentino, that there was prejudice simply by the fact, in this case it's a little starker, the jury only had the wrong instruction in front of them. They didn't even have the right instruction there. So the idea that he was convicted for the wrong offense, I think, is established by the record. Also, the government's cases tend to focus on situations of variance or misdescription of element where the, quote, evidence was overwhelming. But I would point out to the Court that that is not the standard that's been applied in a constructive amendment case. We don't look to see, and again, DiPentino's instructive here about the evidence being overwhelming. And of course, we have an argument that the evidence wasn't overwhelming. We have a Rule 29 motion here as well because of the issue about the dates. And with regard to the dates, it's sort of for the Court to address whether a variance in this case of 4 months is closer to the 18-day variance that was has been found to be non-harmful in Hinton and other cases, or the 7 months that the Court's found.
Tell me why you think it might it runs a risk of a double jeopardy type prosecution here, because he only He was deported sometime before 1999 and only reentered in 1999. So what's the double jeopardy risk from a variance between November 20th and March 12th?
You know, I was thinking about it, and to be honest, I don't think there's a strong double jeopardy argument. I think the issue more is ability to prepare a defense, and there may be a scenario.
What defense does he have to it? To an interview that occurred on March 20th. I mean, to an interview. I mean, it happened. It's not like you have a drug transaction where maybe it happened, maybe it didn't happen, or the firearm situation where the guy's accused of having a firearm and he's in prison and no possibility of having it on or about the date alleged. What's the...
Well, perhaps the best argument I would respond with is that illegal reentry is... It's a relatively simple offense for the government to prove in the ordinary case, as I'm sure the Court's aware, and as I frequently advise my clients. It's also an offense that carries very steep penalties. Under those circumstances, we think the least the government can do is prove the right offense, prove the right time frame, not the particular day, the right time frame, and put in competent evidence to establish the defendant's guilt. That didn't happen in this case. And if possible, I'd like to reserve my last minute for rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honor.
Rosen. Thank you. May it please the Court, I'm Amber Rosen, representing the United States of America in this case. I want to address the Court's question regarding, even assuming it was a constructive amendment and assuming it was error, was he prejudiced? And the answer is no, for a number of reasons. Not only the reason that the Court itself raised, which is that these are but three different means of committing the same offense, but also for several other reasons, the first of which is the trial focused on the correct offense, and that is a big distinction from the cases that the defense relies on, such as Shipsey and Dipentino, where the court reversed for a constructive amendment. And what I mean by that is the indictment was read to the jury, and that's said, found in. The evidence at trial focused on when he was found and focused on the interview on March 12th. The government only argued the found in theory and never argued that the defendant should be convicted simply because he reentered.
You know what? I agree with you. It's just silly as all get out, because he had an interview in this country, so he was here. That is, he was found here, and that had to have followed a reentry. But the problem is that the jury was instructed that all they had to do was find that he reentered, and nobody questioned that because wasn't an issue. I mean, so therefore they stopped short in effect. Now I'm recognizing that it's a silly stop, but never mind. They stopped short under the instructions they could convict without going ahead and taking the next step and saying, ah, yes, but he was found here.
Well, I have two responses to that, and one is I'm going to talk about what the court did and how it, I think, corrected that erroneous instruction. But I think that gets to the next point. I also want to get back to, you know, why doesn't it matter? And I think the fact is that because of the focus of the trial on the found-in and in the argument by the government that he needed to be found, and the government went through the elements of the offense with the jury and discussed that as found and said several times, you need to find that he was found here, that there really was no confusion on the jury's part of what it needed to do. And the reason that is so different from the other constructive amendment cases where the court did reverse is because in each of those cases, Shipsey, Dipentino, the government put on evidence of the alternate theory or the impermissible theory. The court instructed that they could find him guilty of the impermissible theory, and the government in those cases argued the impermissible theory. Sometimes only evidence of the impermissible theory was what was there. So there was a big question that the jury would have believed that they could have convicted on the impermissible theory. And I think because the focus on this trial was all on found in, that confusion is not present in this case. In fact, we know that because when the defense counsel argued that it could be that they should look at whether the date in the indictment matched up to the reentry or the found-in date, the government got up and objected and clarified that and said, no, he's not charged with reentry. It doesn't matter when he's reentered. It only matters when he was found. And the court then said, said to the jury, you need to find the defendant was found on or about November 20th, 2000. So I agree that maybe to say it corrected its instructions a little strong, in the sense that I don't think the court said that cognizant that the earlier instruction only said reentered. But it did clarify to the jury what they needed to do. And it did tell them specifically that they needed to look at the found-in. So that's one reason why I think that there's no prejudice. Also, let me just add before I move on to the next point. It's also the defense cites in the reply brief the Mundy case for a different proposition, but that case says when looking at instructional error, the court must look at the entire trial in context and not just at the instructions. The second reason I think there's no prejudice is it's something else the court hit on, which is reentry is embedded in the offense of found in.
Yeah, it is, but it stopped short of it.
But as you say, there's no issue that the defendant was found in this case. He was interviewed, he was sitting before the the jurors. And the fact is the overwhelming, whether the evidence is overwhelming, is considered and is the test even in constructive amendment cases. If you look at the Choi case, again cited by defendant in the reply brief, although that case found that reversal was appropriate because they thought the evidence was not overwhelming, the court in that case did look to that issue and said, under plain error, the question is whether the constructive amendment prejudiced defendant. The court noted that there's no prejudice where the proof is overwhelming. Now, it didn't find the evidence overwhelming in that case, but that suggests that that is the right standard here. And because the proof of him being found was overwhelming, I don't think we should be concerned that the defendant was prejudiced. The reality is, in non-border cases, there really is no distinction between reentry and being found. You have to find the defendant reentered in order to find them
found.
Well,
there's a difference. It may not be a pertinent difference if you're actually found here, but you've got all the official restraint stuff,
right,
whatever, which exactly isn't really at issue in this case, because he was here presumably for a year.
Right. So in both of his reentry and his found, the evidence was overwhelming. The issues of the defense that would go to reentry because he wasn't found at the border was not really an issue. Under Godinez-Rabadan, the court said there that the elements were found in. It, instead of saying that the third element was found in, it says voluntarily entered and remained. I mean, there's no question that he remained since he was found so much.
You didn't try the case.
No, I did not try the case.
Everybody was sound asleep.
Yes.
Now, it's too bad, but if people are sound asleep and there's real error, then why shouldn't we just say people were sound asleep and there you are?
Well, because I think it's not real error. I mean, for one thing, I think the court in making that specific instruction to the juror.
But it wasn't. See, that's the problem. It was in colloquy to counsel. And it was almost as if it was an aside. And instead of doing what should have happened, which is one or the other, but particularly the U.S. attorney, who should be trying to protect the record, as it were, should have said, Your Honor, would you please instruct the jury that the jury has to find found in, rather than just simply having reentered without permission.
Well, Your Honor, I would disagree with your characterization of the exchange.
Okay.
And that is the defense attorney said, if any of you have a reasonable doubt about whether the defendant reentered or was found in the United States on November 20th, 2000, then you must return. And then the court jumps in and kind of corrects the on to what needs to be on or about. And then the government counsel says, and further, if I may state my objection more clearly, the indictment charges then found in the United States. It doesn't matter when he reentered the United States. Ms. Foxen says, well, the court's instruction, Ms. Bissett, I think that's become confusing. Ms. Fox, the court's instruction says the defendant reentered the United States or was found in. Obviously, that was a misstatement of what the court actually said. All right, so I'll say found in. And then the court says he must be found in the United States on or about November 20th with a definition of on or about being that contained in the instruction. So I think, you know, the defense counsel referred to the instructions. The court then addresses the jury when all of this is being said, you know, obviously not at sidebar, but in front of them. So I think it was very clear that the government was saying no, only found in needs to be at issue, and the court then turned to the jury and told them that was the case. So, you know, I think that helps reduce any chance of confusion on the juror's part.
The confusion. It's fairly simple, or it's not difficult to say that on or about when you're talking about, you know, a drug deal or whatever is slightly ambiguous, in that the government shouldn't be held to, you know, a precise minute on a precise date in making its showing that the deal did in fact go down, fairly close to when we said it did. Here, there can't be any issue at all about when the interview occurred. And, I mean, maybe one occurred on November 20th. Apparently one did.
Well, the arrest occurred.
Didn't put on evidence of. And so instead put on evidence that happened months later.
Right.
So, I mean, that's another instance of kind of confusion in somebody being asleep at the switch.
Well, I think there's an argument that it was maybe a little sloppy or lazy by the government not to call the arresting officer. And I don't know what the circumstances were that may have caused that. But I think the question is, again, does that require reversal? Is that a variance that matters? And the answer is no, for several reasons. One, generally a date is does not cause a variance in date, does not lead to reversible error unless the date is a material element, which this Court has explicitly held it's not in these kinds of cases. Did it impede the defense? No. There was no defense regarding the date, as there could not have been. He was in custody that entire time. They were on notice that that's what that the government was not going to put on evidence regarding the November 12th date, because in the witness list and the pretrial papers, there was no indication that the arresting officer was going to be called as a witness. So they did have some notice that the only evidence the government was going to put on was the March date. I also think that this case, the Court could look at, for precedent to Godinez-Rabatin. In that case, the government charged an 8-month period on or between during 8 months and didn't specify a date. And the defendant said, you know, that's not specific enough. They should have specified a date within that time period. And the Court said they didn't need to. And so I think that gives some guidance in this case. And the facts are somewhat similar in that case he was in custody that whole time, and in this case he was too.
Well, now, there is this confusing suggestion that the jury could have, by chance, found this guy guilty of illegal reentry. Or it could have found him guilty of having been found here, right?
That's the claim, yes.
And there is a chance that they could have found that he was guilty of being found here on the day he was arrested, right?
Well, there was no evidence about him being found on that date, so.
Well, he was arrested.
There was no evidence that put it on a trial, though, that he was arrested
okay.
on that date.
Okay. How did that get in the record?
It's in the pre-sentence report. It's in the pre-sentence
Only in the pre-sentence report.
It was not put on at trial. The jury was not aware of that.
Then he was interviewed in the jail by a government agent.
Correct.
At a time certain.
Right.
And then the jury was free to find that he was guilty of some crime that he had committed on or about November 20th, which was well in advance of when he was interviewed.
Correct.
And that date, November 20th, is more nearly the date that he reentered illegally, if that's the case.
Well, no. I don't
Closer
believe so.
To All right.
He admitted that he reentered in 1999, so he's at least 11 months away from the reentry date.
I guess what I'm getting at now, all this is preliminary to, if ever there was a statute written to make this prosecution simple, it's this one. There was a time when being found was not a crime. And it's only in the, I don't know, recent, what, 15 years or less that it's been changed. And in my experience, this is the second occasion when we have been quibbling over what is the date. Because somebody isn't paying attention. Either somebody who's drafting the indictment or somebody who's responsible for presenting the evidence isn't. And I think that in these cases, we're going to get about what the court permits. And if we say this is okay, we're going to get it. Because we get it when we say in other forms of law enforcement, if this is okay, that's what we get. Now, if somebody isn't going to take charge and say, let's do it right, let's pay attention, let's at least have one person in the courtroom who is attentive and cares, when are we going to quit saying, this is okay, this is okay, this is okay, this is okay? Now, who's going to take charge? We'll get, I'm a longtime believer in the fact that we will get in law enforcement what we permit. That's as, we'll get it.
I certainly understand the court's concerns.
And it's almost to the point where the court ought to say to these, in these cases, for purely reasons of sending a message that somebody's got to pay attention, we should reverse this kind of case.
Well, if I may respond to that.
Yes.
I certainly understand the court's concerns, and I'm not going to say that those concerns aren't implicated in this case. I would say, vis-a-vis the date, the defense strenuously argued that that was not reasonably near. So that was the issue, and argued that that was basically the major defense in the case. So the jury clearly considered that, and believe that it was reasonably near. I don't think 4 months is such a long time that that is, we should say, as a matter of law, they can't determine that that's reasonably near. As to the instructional error, you know, I think it's a little bit difficult in these non-border cases because, as even this Court has pointed out, I think it was in Pacheco, Medina, you know, it's that Court talked about it's difficult to speak, in talking about reentry and Fountain, it's difficult to speak of one concept without entangling the other. And I think Mr. Alcala's defense attorney is the best example of that. She kept confusing the two and conflating the two and equating the two in her closing argument. I mean, in some sense, she was helping to invite that error. And I think because in the non-border cases, when the defendant's sitting in front of us, it's, you know, there's really little practical or pragmatic difference because the reentry is embedded in it and because of just the nature of the crime that it makes that confusion, you know, even for his own counsel, the confusion can be there. And so I think that mitigates against the prejudice in this case and against the sense of, you know, what could be potential, you know, feeling of just the sloppiness of the case or that somehow the government and the court is itself to blame for maybe a reversal, is that, you know, the confusion is somewhat understandable in the non-border cases where the distinction is minimal and where the defense counsel is, where the defendant is himself conflating the two, you know, that maybe it's not as such an egregious example that this needs to be the case where that message is sent. I appreciate your...
Just go back for a second now, just so I'm sure. Now, the evidence was, of course, that he was found in jail.
No, I don't believe that there... that the agent testified that that is where the interview took place. I think that was kept from the jury.
There was no evidence that he was in jail on the occasion when he was interviewed?
I don't believe so. I think they purposefully kept that information from the juries.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rosen. Ms. Fox?
Thank you, Your Honors. Just briefly, with regard to the date, as I think Judge Levy is suggesting, part of the reason that it was really troubling in this case to have the wrong jury instruction, which I think, as I've said before, is a significant error, is that we had argued the date. We'd argued he's not found in November. The only evidence of found in is in March. Then the jury got an instruction that said, well, when did he reenter? Now, he could well have reentered in November and been found in March, and then the date of the indictment isn't such a problem, although it's 4 months difference, because maybe it's the date for the offense they think they're supposed to find. The second thing that I think compounds the situation here is the verdict form. Reviewing for today, I reviewed it, and as is the practice in our district, the government's verdict form recites the statutory name of the offense and required the jury to find, when it was read into the record at 183 of the excerpts of record, find the defendant guilty of illegal reentry into the United States following deportation. So I don't think that the error was ever, that the confusion was resolved here. I think the jury instructions were incorrect, and I think that the case should be reversed for that reason.
All right, counsel, we thank you for your argument in this matter, and it will be submitted in court and recess for